Next up is Eduardo Castro Wright, the Chief Executive Officer and Vice Chairman for Walmart.
Good afternoon. I'll start by asking each one of the team members, although you know some of them, I thought probably I refresh your memories. Bill Simon is our Chief Operating Officer. You've heard a lot about the impact that Bill has had in across not only stores, but he has also responsibility over some of the things that you heard today, and that actually Rick Webb got even the Innovation Award, the Sam Walton Award today for, and Bill is responsible for that, and certainly he's responsible also for distribution and logistics. So a very broad operating role that has made a big difference in the company. Michael Fong. Michael is our Chief Financial Officer. John Fleming, you know John well. He's our Chief Merchandising Officer, and again, the architect, the visionary, and what has to do with how we go to market today. His Win Play Show strategic framework is making a big difference, and we'll take the opportunity today to update you on some of the things that we've done. Mr. Stephen Quinn. Stephen is the Chief Marketing Officer, and again, he's been behind every single decision on how we bring to life the Walmart brand in the United States, and more now, Doug, across all markets, once we have proven that that integrated way of managing the brand, it's proven to be very successful. A new team member that you've met in the past, but not as a team member of the Walmart U.S. business, and that's Tom Mars. He's our Chief Administration Officer today, and he's got a lot of responsibilities, but I would single out two that I believe that are critical for us. The first one, he is responsible for talent development within the Walmart business, and as such, he's got his hands and fingers in the future of the business. And the second one is compliance. As you know, that's been an area of opportunity for us in the past. And having someone of Tom's talent now leading that effort across multiple areas in the store and in distribution centers and across businesses, I think it's going to be great. Eric Zorn. Eric has responsibility for real estate for the United States, so he does both. His team does real estate and construction both for Walmart U.S. but also for Sam's Club. Jane Thompson. Jane leads our financial services business, and it's a business that's been growing at a pretty nice rates over the last few years, and we're very pleased with. And it's probably a business that works extremely well in delivering the brand promise of saving money to customers. And we do that every day with financial services that are very expensive, particularly at times like now where you have so many people that are unbanked, and many that were banked and now suddenly find themselves unbanked, those financial services that we provide become incredibly important for our customers. And Jeff Mako is in charge of global procurement. Jeff works with both John Fleming and myself on helping, and with Doug McMillan, and helping us create that economic value that Doug just talked about in terms of, so how do we take advantage of our global scale and how we make that a reality not only for the United States but across the globe. With that, let me just address briefly what I believe are the highlights for the business in the U.S. I met with many of you recently, so what I'm going to tell you is not news. First and utmost, I believe that we are very pleased with our financial performance in the first quarter. We had a very solid quarter. We had a very nice comp growth during that that quarter, and more importantly, we outperformed the market across not only the total business, but we outperformed the market in each single one of our business units. As you know, we have segmented the business in six businesses in total, including seven, actually, once you include financial services. In each one of those businesses, our comp growth was higher than the leading competitor in each one of those for the past quarter. So very solid performance. Inventory was mentioned already, but I think that we should highlight that again because I think it reflects the effort that we have done in the last 3 years to start with the low-hanging fruit, as you will recall, when we just decided that we would not have risers in the stores, and we talked with many of you about that. That was a simple decision. The more difficult one was the process-driven decisions that required to be made and that in many cases required also systematic support. And now we've been building those systems, and as a result, our inventory for the first quarter was down, I believe, 4% on the sales growth of almost 4%. So a massive change in the inventory that we carry in our stores. Tom Shoey said it already, but I will repeat it, Tom. That has resulted not only in more free cash flow, as you would expect, but it has resulted in much better financial performance simply because of the fact that we touch the merchandise a lot less. We don't have as many accidents, our markdowns are lower, our shrinkage is at record lows, and that whole composite becomes incredibly powerful in driving the overall business. In addition to great performance in inventory and the fact that we had pretty good top-line growth, other highlights have to do with the Project Impact. You've heard about Project Impact. Project Impact is more than the store, and I've mentioned this in the past, but I will reinforce that today. It is really the way that we go to market today. It is based on the principle that what we stand for is that we save customers money. And we save them money, and you know that that is a very powerful proposition, not only today, but forever. And as you know, many of our competitors are finding that they would love to own that trust. Unfortunately for some of them, the fact of the matter is that Walmart owns that position in the marketplace. Customers trust Walmart to deliver on that promise. And because of that, we obviously enjoy a momentum that some others might lack. In addition to that, to deliver on that save money promise, you can't do that if you don't assort the stores in ways that actually improve the customer experience, but more importantly, it also balances margins across different categories. So how you assort the store and how you present merchandise, which has been at the center of all the transformation that John Fleming has led, is also having a major impact as part of this redefinition of how we go to market. And last but certainly not least, the fact that our customers today, and we survey them, we have a very robust survey that we do every month of over 500,000 people that we ask every month to rate their individual stores. And they rate our stores today as being cleaner, as having faster checkouts, and having friendlier associates. And that composite of great customer experience that has been every month has been going up, and let Bill later on talk about that, has resulted in an overall satisfaction with the brand that it's at record highs. In addition to that Project Impact and inventories and our store growth, The other part that we're very pleased with is how we have managed capital, and our capital efficiency model continues to produce outstanding results for us under Eric's leadership and in real estate, but also across every one of the businesses that manage capital. We have seen incredible performance in terms of getting our construction costs down, for example, significantly, and looking at stores also and opportunities to enter markets that we did not enter before with formats that we have tested and that we're pleased with some of the results. So overall, a pretty good and solid performance in the first quarter. Now, as we go into the second quarter, as you all know, we have some significant headwinds. We've covered that with you all also. Those headwinds are related to the fact that last year we had a very beneficial impact from stimulus checks. We captured more than our fair share of that benefit, and that obviously will have an impact this year. That is a trend that for this quarter is going to be a headwind. Fortunately for us, we have put in place the processes, as I said before, that allow us to manage our cost structure in ways that we know how to protect the bottom line even when the going gets tough in terms of the of top line. So we feel good about the underlying performance of the business. And we do expect that once we go over this bump in terms of stimulus checks, and again, we've disclosed this in the past, that we our underlying performance that has been around 2.5% to 3% comps, that though that underlying performance is one that we feel very strongly that can be replicated going forward. So with that, I'll open the floor for questions, and I'll ask my team to be ready for that. Robbie?
Oh, thanks, Eduardo. Actually, two merchandising questions. The first one is some others that you compete with have, you know, sort of indicated that across categories, they've seen the customer. If you look at good, better, best, they've seen good and better performing much better than best, you know, more recently. And if you could comment on, you know, if you're seeing that in Walmart US, and if you're not. And then the second question I had is on the price promos increasing externally, you know, at your competitors, especially in discretionary categories, you know, seeing a lot more high low out there. I've spoken to, you know, some vendors, even of yours, that would say that on items that used to be not in Walmart that are there now, that sometimes at EDLP you're achieving better AURs than when these brands were in high-low competitors, and sort of how that fits into maintaining EDLP when the rest of the world is getting more high-low, and if you see that impacting your business.
I'll only address that last part, and then I'll ask John to take it. But remember that we always have talked about the basket, and our promise to customers that they will save on the basket. We've never competed on individual prices across every market. Now, our promise to our customers is that on a market by market basis, that we will match the lowest price available in the market, and that continues to be the case. And rest assured that we will not allow to be underpriced, and competitors will find that out, because in markets where they are taking some initiatives of that nature, they're finding that we are very responsive, because we stand for price and intend to continue to stand for price. John, I don't know if you want to take that.
Yeah, I think regarding your first question, I think the customer is seeking value. And so in some cases, that can mean that they're going to a lower price point to find that value. But even in the premium products, where there's innovation, they're still opting in there. And so, you know, there just has to be that value. So when you have innovation with the price customers are participating, where it's clear that there's terrific value, and that's probably even easier for us to communicate at the opening price level. There is a lot of activity there, but it's the stuff in the middle where, you know, it's not clear what the value proposition is. The price alone isn't enough for what it is unless there's innovation attached to it. Yeah, I mean, we continue to always look at where the customer's going and where's the growth, and then developing the assortment and the presentation based on where the growth is. So in some cases where customers are seeking more value at a certain level, those are the things that we would broaden. And sometimes in the middle, if the customers are not participating as much, that might be reduced. But that is sort of the basic principle of the Win, Play, Show. Is it's a framework to be able to prioritize growth. And so where we see the growth, we expand. And then where we see the decline, then we narrow down pretty quickly and to try and drive productivity.
So would you say you're editing more towards good and better right now?
It depends on the category. You know, it really depends on the category. But, yes, opening price points are doing quite well.
Why don't we go over here to the left?
Speaking of opening price points, can you guys comment a little bit about an update on Great Value, the private label relaunch? Have there, you know, any, the execution of it? Are you delaying any aspects of that? Can you just give us some color?
Jack, why don't you take that one? For those of you that have not met Jack, Jack Sinclair is the executive vice president that runs our grocery business. Is from Northwest Arkansas, as you will know pretty soon.
You'll hear from my accent that I'm not from Arkansas or Alabama. Great value. We've put a lot of work and resource into this over the past year. And under Andrea Thomas's team, there's a whole load of relaunches coming through, and they're feeding their way into the store. But strategically, we're about selling brands for less. Our program is all about selling the brands that matter most to our customers in that basket, at that discount, at that price separation. So the work that we're doing on Great Value is very much about giving that offer to the customer, but it's about making it as an alternative. We're not trying to get to the kind of levels that Andy Bond in England would have in terms of what the participation is in private brand. We're about putting a very professional team in place who can bring products that are very clear, very, very well formulated products, very well presented products, but we're very much about trying to sell brands for less and providing great value as a choice within the range.
And has the plan changed from the beginning of the year to where we are today in terms of the timeline of what you're trying to do?
No, I don't think the plan's changed. I mean, the categories come and go, and what we've done in certain categories have happened faster than has happened in others. But as John says, what we're doing, we're responding to where the customer's going. So if the customer's going to OPP or going to the entry point price, we'll be there for the customer. If the customer's not, then we won't. But we're still very much on track with the original plan.
Stephen Quinn, as you know, leads marketing, and the private label relaunch of Great Value and other brands has been the work of Stephen's team. We've taken a page from the consumer product company's book and have replicated what you would see there in terms of marketing being responsible for product development and how the brand gets built, and then it's hands in a consumer products company would be handed off to your sales organization and marketing, and here it moves to merchandising. So I don't know if you want to add something with respect to private label.
Yeah, the only thing I will add to what Jack said is there, you know, clearly there is a customer that is looking for a private brand offering, or in some cases has to use a private brand. And I think what we're doing is providing a better offering than we have in the past to that customer, so that that customer doesn't have to supplement their national brands by going to another retailer. So effectively now, I think, as Jack said, we've got a portfolio that really meets a broader range of needs for customers.
Let's go in the center, Mark.
Mark Miller with William Blair. I have several pharmacy benefit questions for John. Can you talk about some of the key learnings from the Caterpillar pilot as you evolve your strategy? And what are the long-term objectives here, and how are you measuring success? And then last, you have great generic pricing, but what steps are you taking to improve the pricing on branded pharmaceuticals, particularly at Mail? And Eduardo, I want to know what you were telling him there.
He was telling me how good I look. He liked my tie.
So
So let me ask you to repeat the Caterpillar one, and then when I'm done with the answer, I'll ask you to do the second one again, if I may.
I know at industry forums you've talked about the pilot and what you've learned, but I thought for this audience to maybe also integrate that in how we think more broadly about the stores as well. But, you know, what are the greatest learnings, successes from that program?
Absolutely. So I think for those of you that aren't aware, it's a pilot program that we've recently begun to expand with Caterpillar, a wonderful company, a program basically where we offer Caterpillar great prices on prescription pharmaceuticals, and in response, they incent their employees to come to Walmart to fill their prescriptions. It's really that simple. Caterpillar continues to use its pharmacy benefits administrator to manage its claims transaction, data flow, and that end of the business. But we have a direct relationship with Caterpillar on product, on prescription pharmaceuticals. It's gone very well. I think it's safe to say that it has done better than we expected at this point, and we're quite pleased. More importantly, the customer appears to be very pleased, the employee. I would say that it's not a mandatory program, meaning customers can choose to fill their prescriptions wherever they want in the affected market. And from our perspective, it's quite clear the customer is choosing Walmart. So I think that answers that question.
I think it does.
And the next question was?
Okay, if you're willing to take the next part. Yeah, just longer term, the objectives here. There's some discussion about how large this pass-through model could be in the marketplace. Do you have, are you past the pilot stage? And I guess for this to become larger, you've got great pricing on generics, but some in the industry don't see your pricing on branded pharmaceuticals, particularly brands at mail, as being as competitive. And what steps can you take to change that?
I would just revoice what Eduardo said a little earlier. I think it was Eduardo. I think Jack echoed that. Ours has always been a basket strategy. And as it relates to the employer is very pleased with the savings that they're seeing. We are expanding beyond Caterpillar. And if you know any companies that are struggling with their health benefits cost, have employees who need savings, we're in that business.
That's what I told him. I said, you have here a lot of financial institutions that seem to be in trouble. So I said, you probably will find here a very good audience. They might want to go back to their respective companies and pitch our program to their company. So that's...
No follow-up.
All right. Thank you.
Why don't we go back there? Yeah, you got it.
Eduardo, hopefully everybody appreciates the headwind from the stimulus checks in 2Q, but from your comments, it seemed to suggest that you may have some incremental SG&A savings here in the second quarter. Can you elaborate on that for us?
I can a little bit. I can tell you, for example, that if you compare the gas prices year over year, obviously they are lower. And if you think about the cost of distribution for us, and how much that weighs in the overall cost structure, you could expect that in relative terms, so you get a tailwind from that. So that's, for example, one. The second one is one that I would ask Mr. Bill Simon to talk a little bit more about it, which is the fact that productivity from a store point of view is at a all-time high. And if you read our report for the first quarter, you probably saw that wages grew at a slower pace than sales, in spite of the fact that we had obviously rate increases, as you would expect. So that gives you a sense of how much productivity is having an impact. Bill, I don't know if you want to expand on that.
Thank you, Eduardo. Across all of our store operations, logistics, warehousing operations, productivity initiatives have been underway that are yielding results. Some of them you've seen in the previous quarters, and we continue to accelerate those. you know, Rick Webb got the award this morning for leading a lot of those projects. The backroom project that I've described to you before has been, I think, it certainly exceeded all of our expectations, to the point where Thursday, when we had our hourly associates in Bud Walton, where you all were this morning, they spontaneously applauded an inventory management and backroom process, and that in and of itself would tell you how much it means to them, because it's making their lives easier, which then allows them to be more productive and us to be better in stock and to deliver a little bit higher sales and a better return in the stores. And we continue to accelerate those activities and believe that we're on a productivity cycle that will begin to, or continue as it has for the last about 18 months, to generate operational improvements.
Thanks. And Maggie?
Eduardo, you've had tremendous success in combining the supercenters and the neighborhood markets in various metropolitan areas. Could you comment on how the market side and some of your other newer small formats might fit into this overall scheme of things, and what has been your experience so far?
Certainly. If you think about our neighborhood market, and by the way, market side is, it's a neighborhood market. It's just different size of grocery store. But the principle is the same. It's to capture a different shopping trip, right? And typically our supercenter has done a brilliant job in capturing your stock up trip, and in some cases your fill up trip. But you still have a significant number of grocery trips that we are not capturing, and that our grocery stores led by our neighborhood markets certainly can do. Under John's leadership, and I'll ask him to cover a little bit more on this, but under his leadership, we have been redefining not only what the supercenter looks like, and that's what you've seen at Project Impact, but also how do we go to market with grocery stores. The best example of that, and I think it's the best way to exemplify that win, play, show strategy, where you have categories like fresh, where we have defined that in fresh we're going to win, but you have a very large segment of the population that would be a Hispanic demographic, where the presentation of fresh requires a different level of authority than the one that we have in supercenters. And if you think about grocery stores then and neighborhood markets, the transition to serve those specific opportunities, as you would have, for example, with our recently opened Supermercado de Walmart, which is in Houston. I don't know if you've been in that store, Maggie, yet.
No.
If you haven't, I suggest you might want to go. It's a wonderful way of presenting fresh merchandise with authority. John, I don't know if you want to add to that.
Yeah, I think we're in the process of what we did for the Supercenter with Project Impact, of applying those same principles to the neighborhood market. And in fact, we had an opportunity with an existing neighborhood market to convert it to the Supermercado, because it was in a Hispanic neighborhood. And it gave us a chance to really pilot a new program which would better connect with that consumer. But we did some pretty dramatic things there, where we increased the presentation of fresh dramatically and downsized some of the packaged goods and some of the frozen areas. And we were able to drive, I mean, when it opened, it got just incredible response from customers. And the sales kind of fell the way that we had spaced it. So I think we got to the sort of the same level. And what you'll see over the next few months is that we are taking that same approach with the general market, neighborhood market, where we will apply some of those same principles in terms of adjacencies and space allocation and, you know, navigation, sight lines, and product presentations to figure out how can we better engage customers in different shopping occasions. Because the Supercenter, it is a tremendous vehicle for the stock up, and we get some fill in there. But we think there's an opportunity to have complementary vehicles where we can get quick trips and more of our share in fill-ins.
Let's do one more question. David.
Thanks a lot. You know, in the first quarter, you talked a bit about on the conference call about the healthcare costs being significantly higher. Can you just talk about the opportunity either through the year or into next year, how we should be thinking about that opportunity to manage that a little bit, maybe into the back half or at least into next year, and how we should be thinking about it?
Yeah. That certainly is going to continue to be a headwind this year. As you know, the programs change on a yearly basis. Part of the issue has to do with the fact that with the current economic environment and just the dynamics in terms of employment that that has created, there are things in the design of programs that you would have to adjust for this different circumstances. And this is probably one where a program was designed for a different type of time, and we need to adjust that. As we enter the enrollment period at the end of this year, then we can make those adjustments, so you can expect that we can optimize some of the issues that we have right now going forward next year.
So as we think just about that, the 37 basis points said it was up, I guess, in the U.S. Was that all, you said it was predominantly that. I mean, should we be thinking that that is a cost that's going to continue, that same type of dollar amount, 200 and some odd million per year, per quarter for the rest of the year?
I wouldn't make that that assumption. I wouldn't make that assumption.
Do you think some of it?
No, and you have to think that in addition to that, I believe that we also disclosed that we had some incentive bonus payments to our stores that also impacted the cost in that quarter. And as you know, those are related to performance. So if there's performance, I'm glad to pay those too, even if they have a headwind against, and that's going to the store. So I wouldn't make that assumption you just made is one that.
So maybe a little aggressive. That is.
I think that's aggressive.
And if I could, Eduardo, expand on that just a little bit. There's a little bit of a catch-up adjustment that took place in the fourth quarter. You heard us talk about it in the first quarter again. Specifically what happened, Susan Chambers, is we saw the level of take-up in the program higher than we had anticipated. With the benefit of that in hindsight, you've got to go back and correct the record for that. The second thing is the utilization, once you have more people participating, was higher than we expected. So the catch-up nature of this, David, is not going to replicate itself. Okay. Eduardo, there is a higher ongoing cost level. That's going to be a pressure. But the level of increase that you saw in that quarter is not representative going forward.
Can you give a sense of magnitude on that, or should we just kind of
I think
do that
understand.
On our end?
All right.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you.
The only thing I would add on that, because I think it's important we don't talk, we talk only about the cost side, but we're not talking about the other side. And the fact of the matter is that if you look at our healthcare offerings right now for our associates, are best in class. And that has also beneficial impact in the business. Suffice to say that we just had our engagement scores for both associates in the United States, but also field management. And in both cases, Bill Simon is very proud to report that the numbers are off the charts. So people, our people, appreciate what we're doing for them, including that component. Now, it is a much lower cost than any other retailer today for associates. So we've got a pretty good program. It costs a little money.
Okay, Eduardo. Thank you, Eduardo Castro-Wright, and the rest of the Walmart U.S.